our featured story. It's all about, on that point, Charlie Kirk's assassination. And we'll talk about Candace Owens meeting with Erica Kirk. So yesterday, finally, there was a showdown. But unfortunately, it didn't happen in public. It happened behind closed doors. Yesterday afternoon, Candace Owens finally had a sit-down with Charlie Kirk's widow, Erica Kirk. They met for 4.5 hours with lawyers, with personnel. Candace asked all of her questions, and Turning Point personnel provided all of their answers, all of their receipts, documentation. They came prepared. And if you've been following the story, this is the latest development, because what was supposed to happen yesterday was a live stream. For months, Candace Owens has been accusing Turning Point USA of complicity or participation in Charlie Kirk's assassination. She says the Turning Point personnel betrayed Charlie Kirk. Those closest to him betrayed him. He was betrayed by everybody, she said. And as time has gone on, she has insinuated that Erica herself, who is now the head of Turning Point, as well as many of Charlie's close friends like Blake Neff and Andrew Colvett, among others, that they were all involved, that they either gave their consent or they participated in Charlie's murder. Finally, Turning Point felt the need to answer those charges. And they announced a couple of weeks ago that they would do a live stream addressing the allegations, a public, in-person live stream where they would talk about it. That was supposed to happen yesterday. And I'm sure you remember this. Blake Neff put down the gauntlet. He said they are hosting a live in-person stream in Phoenix from Turning Point headquarters where they would respond with receipts and personnel and everything to all of the conspiracies about Turning Point. He said that Candace Owens could attend in person and that she would be at liberty to ask anything. Candace Owens declined the invitation. She said, I'm busy that day. I can't travel, but I'll live stream your live stream. So we were supposed to get a live, think about it this way. We were supposed to get a live in-person confrontation. And I think that's honestly the best case scenario because that is how our court system works. You face your accuser. There's a sense of justice. There's a jury. The American people get to witness this on a live stream. We all get to watch. And we get to see the evidence presented. We get to see it laid out in a public forum, and we get to decide in the court of public opinion. And the accused will present their evidence. The accuser will present their evidence. The accused will face their accuser in person. And after that, nobody can say that anything is being hidden. Nobody can say that anything is being withheld from the public. I really think that would have been the best case scenario because so much has been said on all sides of this. Wild conspiracies and speculation, as well as a lack of evidence, let's say, from Utah police. They've not presented all their evidence or their entire case because of the due process constitutional protections afforded to Tyler Robinson. And so I think everybody would have liked to see, whether you're skeptical or not, whatever side of it you're on, everybody would have liked to see Candace Owens, who unquestionably has spearheaded the issue, for better or for worse. We all wanted to see her ask the questions, and that would have been the moment of truth. Is there even a rebuttal? And if there is it compelling? What is it? Everyone was dying to know. But she backed down. She said, oh, I can't go. My husband has people coming in from out of town. I'm busy that day. And that was a huge disappointment because you can't do that. You actually can't spearhead a challenge like that and egg everybody on and lead the charge, lead the mob for 3 months, pointing the finger. They did it. They're guilty. We have the evidence. We have the receipts. We have the names. And then when those people who you have been accusing, when those people say, okay, bring it on, say it to our face, where we can actually answer the charge. You can't turn around then and say, oh, I'm busy that day. Oh, I got something going on. That doesn't work. Because at the minimum, let's say you don't have a responsibility to get everything right or anything right. Let's say for a moment that Candace is completely in the right. She can ask any question, say anything. And even though she frequently gets it wrong or has disregard for the truth or her standards are lax, let's pretend for a moment that doesn't matter. At the minimum, if you're talking all that shit, you have an obligation then to face the person you're accusing and make the case. Because otherwise, what credibility do you really have? It's easy to sit in your fortress, in your bunker, and throw all this stuff out there, make these wild claims. I have ideas. I'm taking on the system. It's easy to do that when it's only going in one direction. How much credibility do you have that the moment someone stands up and says, you know what, let's debate it out, you shrink and you retreat into the palace and say, ah, never mind, I'm just going to do my own thing. It's not a good look. And it's the wrong thing. So she said she couldn't go. She said, as an alternative, she would live stream her reaction to Turning Point's live stream. Turning Point would go ahead and present their evidence. And rather than hearing it and challenging it in person, she said she would be live streaming it and giving her reaction to the public. And you say, well, that's not ideal, but it's maybe the next best thing. At the minimum, she's having to face in real time a counterargument. And we'll see what she's made of. We'll see. It's sort of like a one-way cross-examination. We'll see if she's able to answer what they have to say. Well, then they work out just in the last few days. We're not even getting a live stream at all. And they announce that instead, Candace Owens will be meeting privately with Erica Kirk behind closed doors. So no live stream. It's not in public. We don't get to hear it. We don't get the evidence. It's going to be completely private. And suddenly, Candace Owens' schedule clears up. She couldn't make the live stream, but she could stream the live stream. Now she made time, and she had a 4.5-hour meeting with Erica Kirk. So she didn't have time to fly to Phoenix, Arizona, but she did have time for a 4.5-hour meeting. Which you have to imagine involved time on either side of that, traveling to and from. She couldn't fly there to do it in person, but she could do a 4.5-hour meeting where there's no cameras. I find that really interesting. And they say that it's a meeting with a guy named Strife at Turning Point, Erica Kirk, Turning Point's lawyers, and Candace Owens. That's the meeting. She's there for 4.5 hours. She doesn't say anything all day. Today, she gives her recap of the meeting on her show. She starts out by playing a Jewish song and dancing to it, and she says Shabbat Shalom, which I find to be very strange. She talks about it on her show for about 30 minutes and then spends another 30 minutes talking about a bunch of other crap. Really? This was the moment we were all waiting for. You backed down from the challenge. You didn't even live stream it. You caved and did this in-person meeting. You don't say anything all day. Everybody's waiting for it. Finally, you do your show recapping the 4.5-hour meeting. She doesn't even dedicate her entire one-hour show to the meeting. Doesn't dedicate even the entirety of her one-hour show the next day. She spends 30 minutes talking about it. I think she did more sponsorships than she talked about the actual meeting. More sponsorships for like pro-life and gold or whatever it is than she did talking about the actual meeting. And what she talked about, honestly, I didn't even follow it. I didn't even really understand what she said. It was so rambly and non-committal and half-baked. It seemed like at once, she was saying, well, Turning Point is innocent. Erica Kirk is innocent. And they showed me some receipts. And Tyler Robinson's the killer. And he shot Charlie Kirk. And the bullet stopped in Charlie Kirk's neck because they saw the medical report. So she totally walked it back. But then at the same time, she comes out and says, well, but some people at Turning Point are bad because the vibes are off. No evidence. She just says, I don't know, I feel like something is off. She says she brought up the Egyptian planes to Erica Kirk, but didn't really tell us what the result of that was, what Erica said, or if there was a conclusion that was reached, and maintains that she still sort of believes in a conspiracy. And to borrow a phrase, the whole show was pretty fake and gay. Fake and gay. She sounded nervous. She sounded not confident. It sounded like she knows she's full of shit. It was confused, rambling, noncommittal, wants to maintain the facade that there's some conspiracy, I'm still on the case, but at the same time, walking significant parts of it back, and in the end, only spending about half the show talking about it before she launched into a bunch of other stuff about Tim Pool and other drama. And here's what I think happened. So what happened to the big bad Candace Owens? I think that's what everybody's wondering. What happened to that cockiness? What happened to the swaggering Candace Owens? For 3 months, this negress, this uppity black woman, has been going on her YouTube and bobbing her head. I'm going to name names. That doesn't work for me. What you mean? What you mean? That ain't work with my timeline. What you mean? I got the names. You don't want to fuck with me, nigga. That we've been hearing that for 3 months. We have been hearing this uppity ignoramus for 3 months, bobbing her head, cocky. Hey, yo, I got names. Don't you try. Don't play with me. Where'd she go? Where'd that Candace go? Where is she? What happened? Did they replace her with a body double? Is it AI? Check her earlobes. Check her earlobes. Did they replace her? Because we got a very different Candace Owens. Today, we got a Candace Owens who was sort of nervous, saying, hi, guys, Shabbat Shalom. Everyone's saying I sold out. What do you mean? That's not true. Those are bots saying that. I still believe there's a conspiracy. What happened? What happened to that same energy? She went into the meeting with this energy, giddy, grinning, smiling, Erica Kirk. She's talking about me. I know she's talking about me. I'm going to set her straight. I'm going to ask my questions. Tell me where I lied, she said. Then she goes in the meeting, whole different attitude. Changed her tune. She comes out of the meeting, whole different attitude. Erica's the best. Turning Point's innocent. It's just some people in Turning Point might be bad because, you know, if we don't know, but we know it feels off. What happened? You know what I think happened? I think this is why Turning Point called the meeting in the first place. Because a lot of people said, a lot of people that defend Turning Point were saying they're making a mistake hosting the meeting. They're saying no matter what they say, Candace will continue fueling the or fanning the flames of the conspiracy. People said, so why did Erica agree to the meeting? Here's what I think happened. Based on my intimate knowledge of how these things work. The way the defamation law works in the United States is very interesting. If you defame or libel an ordinary person, a private citizen, there's a very low bar to prove that you've defamed somebody. So let's say if I talk about my neighbor who is not on Twitter, who's not on Facebook, who's not a famous person. If I take my neighbor who's a private person that just has a job and is unknown, and I start saying, this person's a murderer, this person's a rapist, this person's terrible. All they have to prove is that I was reckless. All they have to prove is that what I'm telling the world about that person is not true. And they win. And they get to extract a lot of damages. If, however, you are a public figure, if you're famous, so let's say if you're the president of the United States, if I say a lot of terrible things about the president, he has a much higher bar legally to find me guilty. He has to prove, the standard is called actual malice. And what that means is that you knew you were lying and you lied to hurt that person. And then they have to prove how much money they lost. So it's very difficult to prove defamation if you're a public figure. And it's even more difficult to for it to be lucrative, for it to be viable, to win any kind of money, because you have to prove the damages too. How do you prove that somebody is engaging in actual malice? You have to prove that they lied and they knew they were lying, which is a very tough thing, because how do you know that somebody is lying? Well, I imagine maybe that's what they did in this meeting, because Turning Point brought their lawyers and they brought their documentation. And if they show Candace Owens certain information with a lawyer present, if Candace continues to talk badly about Turning Point after having verifiably seen evidence to the contrary, they can prove actual malice. They can prove that she's knowingly lying. Maybe that's what they did. Maybe that was the strategy. Perhaps during the meeting, Candace Owens was threatened. And they told her, if you keep going like this, we have now shown you the evidence. We will sue your pants off for defamation. Because why else would it be a private meeting? Why would it be a private meeting? Why would Candace take a private meeting instead of doing it in the public? Isn't that her whole thing? Isn't her whole thing that we need to disclose things? We want people to know? She's going out there saying, why does nobody care? Why isn't the FBI talking? Why won't they give us the evidence? Why isn't Turning Point answering me? Why isn't the president addressing this? But then she takes a private meeting. Make that one make sense. For 3 months, the line was that we needed a public disclosure. That's why she was airing this out on her show. That's why she's showing private text messages. That's why she's attacking people on her show every week. Ostensibly, even if you're a believer, it's for the sake of public disclosure. Then you get a private meeting. Let me tell you what happens in a private meeting. It is not disclosure. What happens in a private meeting is a deal is made. That is what happens in private meetings. Private closed-door meetings with lawyers present is for deals. That is where deals are made. Deals that might not be well received by the public. That is where secretive arrangements are made in the shadows where no one is looking so that two sides can come to a formal agreement without the pressures of public opinion. That's what a private meeting is for. So she sits down for 4.5 hours, and I'm sure she was told in some way, shape, or form, we will sue you if you don't stop. And so Candace went live the next day, and she wants to have her cake and eat it too. She's trying to keep up the charade for her followers, but she knows that if she keeps talking, one, she's wrong. She was definitively told she was wrong, and that she's going to be sued. And what's sad about this is that the real enemy, the real problem is the culture of paranoia that she has created, because now her own audience doesn't even believe her. And I watched this live stream today, 300,000 people watching, and all the comments were negative, all of them in the live chat. All of the top comments. If you go to the top comments of her video, every single one is saying, I can't trust anybody. It's a big club and no one's in it. I'm done with this. This has rotted my brain. I'm going back to my normal life. We can't trust anybody. Everybody is saying that she got the call. She sold out. She even addressed it on her show. She said it's all bots. So I guess that's part of the conspiracy now too. The French, the Egyptians, the Israelis, the Beekeeper Society, and even her own audience that disagrees with her, now they're part of the conspiracy too. And the audience think she's part of the conspiracy. Everybody's pointing the finger at everybody else. And now she's being devoured by the own by the monster that she herself created. She whipped everybody up with this insanity, totally irrational, totally paranoid. She got told the facts. She's trying to save face, and she's now being devoured by the monster that she herself created, who is saying, oh, now she's in on it. Now she was, Erica was at her wedding. She's in the club too. And it's a fitting end. And I think these contradictions are eventually going to destroy her. You see, she's becoming completely unhinged. The way that she is lashing out at Tim Pool, she did some Instagram live pleading with her audience, I'm not compromised. This is the beginning of the end. These contradictions will devour her. And in the end, she is going to get crippled by defamation lawsuits. I know she's got a few of them coming at least. And that's going to be the end of it. Let this be a lesson. And the lesson is, our strongest weapon that we have is the truth. And the second that we compromise on our intellectual standards, the second that we compromise for the sake of some sense of partisanship, for example, I saw Ian Carroll. He said, you're on the wrong side of this. You're siding with the wrong people. This is an opportunity to strike a blow against Israel. The second that you start to engage in that kind of mentality, you lose your greatest weapon, which is the truth, which confers credibility upon you. It confers legitimacy. And that is gold. It is worth its weight in gold. Because think about the crisis that the country is undergoing. It is a crisis of confidence. It is a crisis of legitimacy. It is a crisis of credibility. That is how you would characterize the problem in society. It's faithlessness. Faithlessness in the elections, in the mainstream media, in the universities, in our government, in our law enforcement, in our politicians. It is a loss of confidence that all of the powerful people are being honest to us, or that they're looking out for us, or that they're even who they say they are. That's really the problem. It would be great if we had an intelligence agency that was actually defending the homeland and was made up of patriots and was looking out for the people. It would be great if we had a paper of record that was actually honest and looking out for the people. It would be great if we had a leader, a president, that was honest and looking out for the people. We would love that. We would love national unity. We would love efficaciousness from these institutions. We would love leadership from a natural hierarchy of elite people. We would love those things. That is what makes a country great. But we have lost confidence in all these people because they have abused their trust, or the trust that has been placed in them. The politicians are corrupt and lie. The intelligence agencies are corrupt, infiltrated, and they lie. The media is corrupt, infiltrated, and it lies. And so now people don't believe in anything. And most people have difficulty discerning because most people have not dedicated their life to sifting through political truth, which can be abstruse and sophisticated and convoluted. So that's why people are having a difficult time. They're unmoored. They don't know where to get information. They don't know who to trust. In comes America First. In comes those who are Israel critical or whoever. And they say, we have a better way. We are going to be honest about race. We're going to be honest about the problems we have. We're going to be honest about Israel and the influence of foreign countries. We have what the institutions don't, and that is credibility, legitimacy, confidence, and we have those things because we tell the truth. When it's unpopular, when it's inconvenient, when sometimes it's messy or can be inconsistent too sometimes. It doesn't always comport with the narrative. The world is not always black and white. And credibility is something that is earned over time by telling the truth and having a good track record, admitting when you're wrong, being proven right even when it was unpopular to say the things you were saying, saying a thing that will cost you monetarily or socially or politically. That is what gives a person their credibility. It's their willingness to tell the truth even when it hurts them. And this is an example of what happens when you embrace everything else, the passions of the crowd, when you drop any editorial standards, when you don't vet information, when you're doing it for money or you're doing it for a grift. There actually is a conflict of interest. At some point, you have to say, if you're getting millions and millions of views, hundreds of thousands of live viewers, you're making millions of dollars, you have to at some point say there is a financial incentive to keep this going always. And you have to then evaluate, is this person doing it for money or for the sake of the truth? That becomes a conflict of interest. And I think this is an example of that runaway train where, let's be honest, the conspiracy theorists are now in the driver's seat. It is now popular. It is now lucrative. There is no censorship anymore. It's not like it was 10 years ago. 10 years ago, if you were a conspiracy theorist, you were ostracized, you made no money, you were censored, you were ridiculed. It was actually, you had to care about the truth more than anything to say those things because it cost you. Let's be honest, it isn't that way anymore. Candace Owens is probably the number one political live streamer or political content creator in the country by far. 300,000 live viewers today. She's making more money maybe than anybody as a conspiracy theorist. So it's not like it was. And now there are these perverse incentives where it just pays to be paranoid. It just pays to throw shit at the wall and say, oh, I don't believe in that. I'm just asking questions. Oh, this stinks. Oh, this looks ridiculous. There's now a powerful financial incentive to just say that for the sake of the money, because there's a general climate of suspicion. And that's why now it is the job of the genuine conspiracy theorist to exercise judgment, prudence, restraint. The pendulum has swung. Now everyone's a conspiracy theorist and the mob is whipped up and they will go with anything, any crumb, any seed of doubt. They will take it and run with it. Now it's our job to be restrained. Now it's our job to lead, actually, in a different way. And for those that cannot discern, to actually provide objective analysis. And Candace Owens was not doing that. And now she is being devoured by her own audience. She told her audience, there's this completely insane conspiracy. Everyone's in on it. It was told to me in a dream. We don't know anything, but we know somehow because we feel like it. And consequently, now that she has been told the facts, backed up by the threat of a lawsuit, now she's in this impossible situation. If she tells the truth, they're not going to believe her. If she lies, she's going to get sued and destroyed. So she's trying to satisfy everybody, and her audience turns on her and says, you know what, I'm just going to bury my head in the sand all over again. She has set back the movement probably 5 years in every way. So let that be a lesson. Now she's cracking up. Where does she take it from here? Who knows? And I think I will at some point be doing an expose about her and where she came from. This is an all too familiar pattern. Who is this person? And I said it to her face when I did her show. For all these people, they say, you know, you talk so much shit. I said it to her face. I said, when I was 18 in 2017, I got canceled for criticizing Israel. You're 10 years older than me. What's your excuse? Where was Candace Owens in 2015? She was suing people for racism. She was suing her landlord, trying to get out of paying her rent, saying that she was infected with black mold and she totally faked it so she could avoid paying her rent. She was doxing conservatives with social autopsy. Then she was telling everybody blacks were going to vote Republican. Never happened. Complete grift. How much money did she pocket from Turning Point selling that fucking lie? Then she worked for Daily Wire. She literally worked for the enemy. Now she's a conspiracy theorist. So what's the pattern here? You have some people like me. I have been consistent for 10 years. Criticizing Israel, the show's called America First, we're race realist, immigration moratorium, trying to infiltrate the Trump admin, trying to secure succession for someone more right-wing than Trump. I've been consistent for 10 years. When it's popular, when it's unpopular. When you get censored, when you get sponsored. When you lose all your friends, when you make a lot of friends. I've been doing that for 10 years since I became an adult. Candace, on the other hand, for 10 years, it's been one grift after another. Selling your land, suing your landlord, suing your white ex-boyfriend for racism, doxing conservatives, telling everybody you're going to get black people to vote Republican. Holding down the fort at Daily Wire. She was on an episode of Mr. fucking Burcham, bro. She did an episode of Mr. Burcham. She's in a rap video from 10 years ago. She is another typical political whore. She is a political whore. And I know a lot of them, and they're not all female. That's not a sexist, misogynistic thing. These people are political whores. And I'm sure you know them. They will go anywhere where there's a check. They will go anywhere, do anything, any video, any. It's like Alex Clark, for example. Where was Alex Clark before she was on Poplitics? She was on like Big Brother. She was on like a dating show in a jacuzzi. It's like there are a lot of people in the political world. They now have shows. Where were they before they were on shows? They were with talent agencies. They were in commercials. They were in music videos. They were on reality shows. Because these are people that desperately wanted fame, desperately wanted that lifestyle. And eventually they landed in conservative politics, the biggest grift of all. And so there's a familiar trajectory. They're with a talent agency. Maybe they dabbled with like they were a cam whore. Maybe they were in a music video. Maybe they were on some low rent reality show. And eventually they got into normie Republican politics, spewing bullshit. They're like pro Trump. They're telling people vote Republican. They're saying conservatism's a new punk rock or whatever. And now that everyone's hating on Israel, now they're that too. Oh, look, Nick Fuentes is viral for hating on Israel. Candace Owens, Tucker's viral for hating on Israel. It's literally free engagement. Can't believe it's not patched. And now they're on that bandwagon. Like that's literally the pattern with many of these people. And at the minimum, I have a lot of respect for, I would call them entryists, institutionalists. There are a lot of people inside, let's say, Turning Point or the conservative movement. I don't agree with these people. And I don't agree with their politics. But I have a lot more respect for them because many of them earnestly believe, some, not all, but they earnestly believe that change will come through an institutional approach. And they dedicate their life to like GOP organizing because they think that's how we can change the country. Okay, I don't really agree with that sort of approach, but they believe in it. And then you got these e-celebrities that glom on, and they literally do anything for a check. They want to be Oprah. They want to be famous. They want to be an influencer. They want to be an Instagram model, celebrity. And if they ever got a more attractive offer to do anything else, they would take it in a heartbeat. If they got offered a record deal, if they got offered a contract to be a reality show host, they would do that in 5 seconds flat. Because this is literally for them just a stepping stone into superstardom. And we have to recognize that the incentives are such that now everyone's criticizing Israel because they see that as a stepping stone. So we now actually have to exercise some judgment, discernment, restraint. That's why I said from the beginning, I don't buy all this stuff and I'm not about to, you know, oh, well, everyone's blaming Israel. I'm going to hop on that train because I'm that guy and it fits my brand and it would be unpopular if I didn't. I'm not about to start doing that anytime soon. I haven't done it for 10 years. I'm not going to start doing it now because you see what that creates. You know, it's good in the short term. Sure, she made a lot of money, but in the long term, well, we'll see how that goes. So anyway, that was the Erica Candace meeting. What a letdown. Total content cucking too. That's the biggest disappointment of all. Because she raised that challenge. I'm on a crusade. I'm at war with Erica. And they said, okay, put up or shut up. And she said, oh, my husband won't let me. My husband won't let me. And then she agrees to a closed door meeting where she took a fucking deal. She agreed to a closed door meeting where she got the call. She took a fucking deal. She shook hands on it and she got scared. And then she comes the next day and all that swagger, all that cockiness has left her body. It has evaporated from her. Now she's just a mom again. You know? So. Serves you right. You trusted a woman. This is, you know, once again, I will remind you, this is what happens. It's too many women. Marjorie Greene, Megyn Kelly, Candace Owens. It's too many women. And as a man, I'm going to start to say, look, I'm going to be honest here for a second, and I hope you can handle this. How is it that the conservative movement is constantly preaching traditional values, a return to masculinity, strength, and nationalism? But it's all women running the show. All women. Who is our political hero? Marjorie Greene. Who's our thought leader? Candace Owens. Who's the mediator? Megyn Kelly. Even, I'll say I don't agree with it, who's in charge of Turning Point? Erica Kirk. What's with all the women? How do you expect to win over young men if everybody, it's all women in charge? One. Two, how can you win over anybody if you're inconsistent? How are you telling everybody, we need to have more babies, get married young, have more kids than you can afford, all this? Biblical masculinity, biblical values. And then you tell the men, submit to a woman, submit to your female boss. And Tucker Carlson's the biggest offender. You know, Tucker has this facade like he's this bro. I'm a bro. Ooh, I'm chewing my Zen. And hey, I just like to fucking chew Zen. And I'm all out of Zen. And I'm just a normal dude, bro. And he endlessly simps for women and pussy worships. Like Tucker Carlson worships pussy. He's a pussy worshiper. Not to be vulgar, if you'll... maybe you prefer a different expression. He's pussy whipped. Nobody will tell these women what's up. I told Candace to her face. I said, you're a woman. I don't want to hear you critique my social life. I don't want to hear you tell me what to do about marriage. You're a woman. Don't tell me what to do. You have no authority over me. You're not my wife. I'm not your husband, tragically. You can't tell me what to do. And I say the same to Piers Morgan, who's a female, basically, spiritually female. I say the same thing to all these people. Women can't tell us what to do. Where are the men? And people say, well, you're not the shining example of masculinity. You're right. You're right. So where are they then? I get all these married guys. They're like, oh, this kid, he's not a father. He's not married. He's a little twerp. Okay, true. Yeah, fair enough. So where are all the married guys? Where are all the dads that are going to put their foot down and say, you know what? The man is the fucking man of the house. And the man should be the man of the conservative movement too. But they're not saying that. They're telling all these young guys, get ready to submit to your wives forever. Get ready and sign up to serve your wife. You need to earn her affection with servant leadership. If your wife is cheating on you, if your wife is bossing you around, if your wife is being a bitch, well, you're just not man enough. That's on you. You need to serve her better. You need to get her more money to buy shit. You need to eat more box. And I'm over here saying, hey, listen, I know I'm the fucking incel loser, but we need to put women in their place. And it starts with our political movement. So it's too many women. Megyn Kelly, Candace Owens. It's enough already. It's enough already. We've had enough of that. We don't need women setting the speed limit for the boys and men to make up the right-wing movement, telling them that's inappropriate. That's not acceptable. You know, Candace is calling Tim Pool a faggot. It's one thing if a man calls Tim Pool a faggot. I don't want to hear women calling men faggots. That's disgusting. And honestly, George Farmer needs to put his wife in her place. Could you imagine your wife has a show in the first place? Then your wife is emasculating other men? Tim Pool, by the way, say what you want about him. This guy has been shot at. And I hate to say it because me and Tim Pool have not had a good relationship and we disagree on a lot of things, but Tim Pool actually faces the music. He's out there. He was out there facing Antifa 10 years ago as a citizen journalist. He's out there at his compound getting shot at. And he doesn't back down. When he gets shot at, he doesn't go and shrivel up and complain. Who are you? You're somebody's wife? You're some woman? He's a faggot. He's not gay, but he's a pussy. Oh my goodness. Women should not feel so comfortable talking about men like that in public, especially men that are not their husbands. A married woman is going out and attacking other men like this, mouthing off to other men. If I were Tim Pool, I would say, hey, George, can I beat the fuck out of your wife or are you going to do it? What kind of man will entertain that? What kind of man should even be expected to entertain that? You're a public figure. You're a man. Some black woman is attacking your masculinity. You're going to sit there and argue? It's like, hey, George, can I slap your wife or are you going to do your job? And I'm not encouraging violence against women, but that's totally out of line. That is totally inappropriate. And that is part of the problem. It's that women have no accountability. They talk like men. They have jobs like men. They lead like men. But unlike men, no accountability. If you're a man saying that about another man, you would expect to get your ass kicked or you'd expect to get in a fight. But you can't put hands on a woman. So what are you going to do? You're going to argue with a woman? That's women's specialty. They're going to try to trigger you emotionally, manipulative, and they know they're never going to get hit. They know nothing bad is ever going to happen. That's why they can't talk like men. That's why they can't grapple with men. Because we all know that you can never hold them accountable. That's your husband's job to hold them accountable. And that's maybe the most evil thing about all this. You're out there pushing traditional values. Candace wants to have it always. She goes on her show and says, I have to take it up with my husband. My husband tells me what to do. My husband, my man tells me what to do. And then she's on her show fucking mouthing off. Okay, so what is this trad family exactly? First of all, he's the son of a lord. You're a ghetto live streamer. That's not trad. Second of all, he's white and from England. You're black and from the ghetto. That's not very trad either. Three, you're a public figure, famous. You're talking about I'm powerful and rich and influential. And what's he doing? He's in the cuck chair? That's not traditional either. And she's the first one to say, make him a sandwich. I'm not a feminist. I am done with these trad feminists. I am done with the trad thoughts, the trad whores, trad this and trad that. We're cargo culting traditionalism. It's a simulacrum of traditionalism. It's a representation of a representation that never existed. A situation where women get to do whatever the fuck they want, but men have all these obligations. You young men need to shut up and get married and man up. You need to go and work in a factory and live in Ohio. You need to go and work at a nail factory and live in southern Indiana and shut the fuck up and just pay for your wife's stuff and pull her chair out for her and be masculine and work with your hands and be this and be that. Oh, but your wife? Well, she has no accountability. She can have a job. She can talk however she wants. She can condescend to you and she can be a bitch and she can talk however she likes in public and act a fool. She can have an Instagram and you take pictures for her. I'm sorry. Is that how it was in the 1900s? Is that how it was in the 1800s? Is that how it was in traditional times? That's your like 50s cargo cult. Where the man's got to be the man's man, put yourself last, servant leadership, shut up, and you need to really be into your domestic life. Don't be a polygamist and don't do these other things. Oh, but your wife? Oh, she could call Tim Pool a faggot on her show where she's bringing down $500 million defamation lawsuits every day. George Farmer, control your bitch. George Farmer, and listen, I like the guy. I met him. I know he doesn't approve of how I talk about his wife. He probably, I deserve a slap or a punch from him, honestly. Nice guy. But George, get your bitch in line. Control your bitch. You can't have your wife talking about other men like that. Honestly, Tim Pool should beat the shit out of George Farmer. He's got that coming. A lot of people should be kicking George Farmer's ass for the way his wife has been talking. He's got that coming. And I'm not encouraging that. I'm not calling for violence, but I'm saying, you know, listen, that don't fly. That's not cool. You want to be a trad movement? You want to be a trad marriage? Tell your wife to watch her fucking mouth. You can't be talking about men like that if you're a married woman. It's disgusting. It's not traditional. They're the first ones to say everybody should be in a trad marriage, but your wife is going to be a complete bitch. Mouthing off like that? What world are you from? Where's that trad? Where's that traditional? You think that flies in China? You think that flies in Saudi Arabia? In Saudi Arabia, the women can't even touch men that aren't their husband. And I'm not saying we should be like Saudi Arabia, but could you imagine a society where somebody's wife is out there saying, that guy's a faggot, that guy is a pussy, that guy's like feminine, this guy's a bitch. It would never fly in any traditional country, in any traditional time period. It's insane. Same goes for Megyn Kelly, going out there tone policing everybody, telling Donald Trump, you called women disgusting slobs. Nick Fuentes killed Ben Shapiro in Grand Theft Auto. Sorry, what are you, my mom? Last time I checked, you're some Fox News talk show host. You're not my mom. You have no authority over me. Oh, you don't like my tone? Well, you're a woman. Frankly, you're a sensitive, emotional woman. Well, he played this video game. It was disgusting. Okay, well, it wasn't for you. It's for the young men that watch my show that play video games. Are you one of their moms? Am I in the basement of one of my friends' houses and we're playing video games? And mom came down the stairs and said, you boys, I mean, we're in America. This is politics. What do you mean? And this is just how it goes. And everybody entertains this. And they dismiss me as like some woman-hating, virgin, incel, whatever. And I'm the only one with any kind of traditional disposition. It's not about hating women. I don't hate women actually at all. I actually find women to be pleasant. When they act like women, it's not about hating women. It's not about disrespecting women or being cruel towards women. Women are actually amazing when they actually act like women, when they are pleasant, when they smile, when they know their place, when they know their role. And men have a place too. Men have a role. And women have a role too. Women don't like to be told that. My place, my role? Yes, yes, ma'am. You have a place, you have a role, just like men do. A man's place is to be in the front line during danger. That's our place in an emergency, in danger. A man's role is to provide and to protect. That's our place. Your place is to be nice. Your place is to be pleasant, nice, beautiful, virtuous, raise the kids, take care of the home, support your man. That's your place. That's your role. And when women act like women, it's a beautiful thing. But we have a country of women LARPing as men. Dressing like men, talking like men, acting like men, but they're not men, and they can never be held accountable like men. They can never be men. They're never going to be fighting in the war. They're never going to be the cops, the firemen. They're never going to be the garbage men. You're never going to see them cleaning the windows on a skyscraper. You're never going to see them at the top of a radio tower. You're never going to see them running the electrical grid or inventing anything. And when are conservative men going to learn? All I get are these wife guy, girl dad doofuses. Tucker Carlson is emblematic of that. He's a sissy. He's a wife guy, girl dad. He says, I'm afraid of women. I think you're afraid of your wife. Tucker says, Nick is steadfast and strong. No, he's afraid of women. I think you're just a pussy worshiper. I think you're just whipped for your wife. Talking to me about it's our job to please our wives. Happy life. happy wife, happy life, he tells me. And I'm just afraid of women. No, we just reject this girl, dad, wife, guy bullshit, frankly. Maybe that works for you. That doesn't work for us. Maybe that worked in your generation. That doesn't work in our generation. You know, and you sound like an old person when you talk like that. Happy wife, happy life. If that was our mentality, we would get eaten alive. Is that, you know, now that women are on basically a form of welfare, now that they have Instagram, if you're just endlessly pleasing some woman, you know what's going to happen? You're going to be like Piers Morgan. That's happy wife, happy life in action. Piers Morgan and Tucker, two wife guy girl dads getting together, getting cucked by their wives. I do half the chores. I please my wife and she's over there pleasing Mr. Suds. She's over there pleasing every guy that's on her Ashley Madison account. So give me a break with that. Anyway, that's just sort of an extended, that was your extra innings there. Little downloadable content at the end there. We're going to move on. We're going to get into our super chats. We'll see what you guys have to say about all this. We'll talk about Venezuela tomorrow. I covered everything I wanted to. We'll dive into the super chats. Isn't that true, though? That's the thing. You know, I don't know if people are lying about me or what. Do people think that I genuinely hate non-whites, Jews, women? I really don't. If that means anything to you, if that's worth anything, I really don't. I really don't hate anybody. I don't wake up with hatred for anybody. And I love all of them in their proper place. I like propriety. And it is proper for non-white people to be somewhat deferential in a country that was founded by whites. And by that, I mean, we want them to be courteous. We want them to be considerate. We want them to have a little bit of acknowledgement. And I'm not talking maybe about blacks as much, but for all of these immigrants and descendants of immigrants, how about a little bit of reverence for the country that welcomed you in? I don't hate you. I don't want you dead. I don't want you out of my country because you're non-white. What I expect is a little bit of reverence for the country that graciously welcomed you in. If you want to stay here, if you want to call yourself American, then act like it. Be an asset, not a liability. Be courteous. Be respectful. Have some fucking respect for the country and the people that built it, that graciously allowed you in. Where's your obligation? We have this obligation, endless tolerance, endless acceptance, always more welcoming. What is their end of the bargain? They come into this country that was built by whites. It's peaceful. It's prosperous. There's a legal system and there's no obligation at all. They don't have to do it legally. They don't have to love the country. They don't have to love the flag or any of it. They're going to be burning Waymos in California when illegals get deported. I mean, what is that? And the same goes for women. People say you hate women. I do love women. I love my mother. I loved my grandmother. I love my sister. And I love a lot of women that are in our movement. I love Michelle Malkin. I love Gina Buntempo. I love Roaming Millennial. I love a lot of these women because they're women. And not to simp, but they're beautiful, they're smart, they're pleasant to be around, they're mothers, homemakers, they're what a woman should be. I don't like these women that LARP as men. It's odious. And the same goes for Jews. You want to be a Jew and make your movies and do your thing, okay, but stop apostatizing my country. Stop subverting my country. You want to be a Jew in Hollywood? All right, you seem to make the best movies. But let's make a movie about Jesus every now and then. How about that? And let's stop making movies glorifying drug abuse and murder and rape and homosexuality and all this other stuff. Let's make something patriotic. You could do it. And if you can't, then maybe we take your studio from you. Maybe we take all your stuff from you.